And on the line now, I have Brian McLaughlin from Inner City Helping Homeless. Good afternoon, Brian.
Afternoon, John. How are you?
Thanks very much for taking the call. We're going to talk about the March homeless figures. There seems to be a bit of an improvement in these, but there's also a bit of fear there about the...
Yeah, absolutely. I think, John, we saw a decrease of 178 from the previous month's figures when the figures for March came out there at the end of April. Now, while we're positive about any reductions, there's always that caveat of how has it happened. And we've noticed over the last 3 months that about 250 people were removed from homeless figures that really should have been left on the list. For example, a lot of them would be couch surfing with family or friends, and because they've decided that they want to do that rather than be in emergency accommodation, they've been removed from any official homeless figure. So there's always that question mark when the reductions are quite big. Plus, the other side of it is the ban on evictions had been in place, and that's going to be removed. So we expect to see the numbers jump again as the summer progresses.
So the ban on evictions is going to be removed, and what about rent increases? Is that all going to start again?
Yeah, like that's part of the frustration, John, because I know we've spoken about it many times, but you know, a lot of people like ourselves and groups that we're in and campaigns that we're in had all called for a ban on evictions to address the housing crisis and address the homelessness crisis, and we were told that it wasn't constitutional. However, COVID forced our hand, and they had to put the ban on evictions in place. And we saw an immediate decrease month on month. The numbers just dropped within homelessness. So it's proven that that's a way of addressing the homeless crisis. But I suppose one of the biggest frustrations we have at the moment is so many of the vulture funds coming in and the investment funds and buying up build-to-rent properties. And what they're actually doing, John, and this is part of the frustration, they've bought a lot of properties that are build-to-rent, but they're not actually renting them out yet. They're keeping them empty. And what that does is it drives up the demand in the rental market. It drives up the prices. So they're sitting on empty properties that could be there available to rent for people, but they're doing it deliberately to inflate the rental prices to maximise the profit they can make.
Yeah, that's crazy. I saw that there was 150 odd houses bought by a vulture fund, and they were earmarked for first time buyers, as far as I know.
That's correct. We just three examples we've come across recently. So the one that was on the news last week would have been in Mullen Park in Maynooth, where they're only going into phase two and three of the site, and someone that had emailed about first time buying got an email back to say actually phase two and three won't be for sale to the public because they've been bought off the plans by one of the investment funds. Now, we saw similar, I live in Lucan, and we saw a similar thing here where I believe it was 225 potential family homes were bought by an investment fund from Cairn Homes, off the plans. And there's been a similar situation out in Hollystown where they've actually purchased these homes off the plans, and in some cases the homes won't actually be ready until 2025. So we need immediate action from the government on these funds, because if they're buying properties that actually won't be finished until 2025, we need action now for the future. We need to take action against it now because it's out of control. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and I agree with you 100% that the action is needed now, not further down the road. There's always excuses coming from the government that they can't bring in, they have to bring in legislation, they have to change the rules. But people often say to me, but if they bring in a budget, they can bring it in overnight.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things to mention there is when the banks took the country down and we were talking about a £40 billion deficit, they overnight created NAMA. So they were able to do it in one night.
Yeah.
Similarly enough, and this would be the one that would frustrate the most, when there was discussions about Ireland taking part in a bid for the Rugby World Cup, there was legislation changed overnight in the Dáil. So they can change things. Things can change. And if they have to change, like we saw with COVID, they can't wait 6 months. They need to take immediate action. So saying that it can't be done is not true. They absolutely can be done, because if the government can't do it, who can?
Yeah. No, it is. I'm frustrated about the whole thing. So I can imagine about how you and your colleagues and your volunteers are.
Yeah, do you know what? One thing is, John, I suppose last week was a bit of a perfect storm, because a lot of us have been shouting about the vulture funds for years, yeah. Ever since Michael Noonan brought them in 2012. So a lot of us have been talking about them. But last week, between I think the prime time episodes that were on Tuesday and Thursday and an incredible article on the Journal by Dr. Rory Hearn, who'd be a good ally of ours, and those all came together in the 1 week, and it seemed to really get the public interested and the public seemed to really grasp what was going on. So I think we need to keep that momentum going and force them into making a change, because one of the things we would have heard last year, for example, John, was due to COVID, the house prices in Dublin would drop. Yeah. But actually what happened was they actually went between March 2020 and March 2021, they went up 3.7%. The CSO just released figures today on it. So that, in essence, means if it was a €250,000 home, in space of 12 months, it's now €260,000. And the actual price of a home in Dublin has doubled with just under 97.8% since 2012, since these vulture funds came in. So it's not reducing house prices, it's not reducing rent. All it is doing is being a breeding ground for profit-making funds to come into the country and take advantage of the housing crisis.
Yeah, and no, as I said, it's so frustrating. And I've mentioned it before, I've interviewed O'Coolan Housing on numerous occasions, and they've proved that housing can be built, affordable housing can be built quite easily.
Absolutely. They do incredible work. And I mean, we were on a webinar with Hugh from O'Coolan Housing. Yeah. He made a very simple point. He said, look, if the government gave me €1 billion today, he said, in 10 years' time, I could hand them back €1.5 billion. So the billion they gave me and the 500 million profit, and I could build 10,000 homes. So, and affordable prices that people can afford to buy. So he said, this talk of it's not possible, it absolutely is possible. In fact, one of the biggest expenses when it comes to developments, and you know, I have family that are in the builder's game, and you know, the land is a huge problem for them when it comes to building. But we have so much public land available through NAMA, through the local authorities, through the HSE, through the Department of Defence. We have a lot of land that's state-owned. And because it's state-owned, there isn't any cost involved in building on it. So the likes of O'Coolan, that's how they do it for a lot cheaper than a lot of the private developers would do it for, because they give them the land and let them build on it, and that reduces the cost massively. What we're doing is we're just looking at the private funds to solve what's a social issue, and as long as we keep doing that, the problems are going to get worse and worse. And I really feel for, I'm 41, I really feel for the generation coming behind me, because the way the country has been set up by the government, it'll be a rental country. People won't be able to ever buy their own home. They'll be stuck in a rental market, renting from these vulture funds with no proper security of tenure, no proper, I suppose, support in place like you would get if you were renting from the state directly. So we definitely need to look at what we're doing here, and we need to do it fast.
Yeah, and that's the main point. It has to be done now. It has to be done quickly instead of all this hemming and hawing about things. I know this shared equity scheme as well is a mystery to me. The government are insisting on going ahead of it, but they've been advised against it by the central bank, the ESRI. And
yeah,
what's going on, dear Brian?
So again, my frustration on that is, so the way it would work, John, would be, say for example, that the bank would give a mortgage to a person of €300,000, and that's not enough for them to buy in the area Dublin they live. So they could take part in the shared equity scheme, and with that, they might get €300,000 as a mortgage from the bank, and then a further €100,000 from the state. But the key point here is they still have to pay that money back. Now, this is where the frustration kicks in for me. If a bank is telling you, based on your salary, your expenses in, your expenses out, if they look at your combined salaries and they look at your bank accounts and they say, based on what you're spending, your daily living costs, etc., the most you can afford to pay back on a mortgage is for €300,000. They're basically saying, as far as we're concerned, that's all you can afford to pay us back for your mortgage. So taking an extra €100,000 on top of that is burying people in more debt. It's absolutely burying them in more debt, and debt that they would struggle to pay back. So again, it doesn't make sense as far as we're concerned. It's not a scheme that we want to see. It should be, these homes should be built at a proper affordable price, not it's a quote-unquote affordable because the bank will give you some money and the state will give you the rest. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I know we have a situation up the road here from us, the Oscar Traynor Road. I don't know if you're
Very familiar, yeah.
Yeah, and it was agreed, all parties in the Dublin City Council agreed for this to go ahead, and it was great. Everybody was happy. I interviewed local councillors, and everybody was very happy. But I only read there recently that it hasn't been signed off on yet.
Again, John, one of the frustrations with that is, I'm sure a lot of people, yourself and your listeners, would have heard a lot about the Land Development Agency and the Land Development Agency bill that Minister O'Brien was bringing in. And again, part of the reason we're very much against the current format of that bill is it will basically create land development agency that will have the authority to sell off public lands. But the key point is it will be taken out of the control of the councillors to vote on it. So whereas the councillors were able to stand their ground in their voting for Oscar Traynor and also for the other development, I can't think of the name off of my head, but they managed to kind of stop those things happening because they said, look, we're not, this deal that you're telling us is great is not good enough for us and we're not voting for it. So they managed to put a block in place to get a better deal for the sale of that land. But if the Land Development Agency Bill comes into play, the councillors won't actually be voting on it. It'll be done behind closed doors. And I suppose the scariest thing that I've heard from Lorcan Sir, who's incredible when it comes to housing, and he was saying that the Land Development Agency could create multiple commercial companies as part of their commercial wing of the Land Development Agency. So they could sell off to many of these funds, but they won't be subject to any freedom of information request because it's a commercial entity. There'll be no transparency, whereas at least now people, journalists, can put in a freedom of information and ask the tough questions. But if the Land Development Agency Bill in the current format goes through, that will remove that, so we won't be able to put in freedom of information about sell-offs of public land. So the transparency, instead of getting better, will actually get worse. So that's something that we need to be strong in fighting as well.
Yeah, so the Land Development Agency Bill, how will this be put through? Will it go through to a vote in the Oireachtas, or what way is that going to work?
It will. Yeah, it will. And I suppose the scary part for us is that obviously the three government parties tend to push things through that they want pushed through. So it will take some people standing up and say, look, we don't agree with this. This is not the way to go about selling off public lands. You know, we have a housing crisis. We don't need to be selling off public land to multiple investment funds and then not being transparent with the public on where it's gone and how much it's been sold for. So we need to fight that as well. What we need is more transparency from the government, not less.
Yeah, it is. It's very, very frustrating, and I can hear the frustration in your voice, Brian. How are things going? Things seem to be improving at the moment, and hopefully we'll be getting out of this mess sooner rather than later, and maybe your volunteers will be back out on the street. How is the ICHH coping at the moment?
The charity is going great. I mean, we have so many dedicated volunteers, so we have maintained our nightly outreach service. As I said to you before, it's just the vans that are out now because we couldn't have the walking teams. So the teams are working in bubbles in the office and up in the warehouse, and they're supporting as many people as they ever did. And in fact, you know, the likes of case management and advocacy and our mental health support partners, BABS, which is Be Aware, Be Safe, they're inundated with people who are struggling with mental health and things like that, because lockdown, I think, affected everybody. Even if you had your own home, it affected you. But if you were in a hotel room with your family or a bed and breakfast or in an emergency accommodation, a private hostel with numerous people in your room, that really takes its toll on people. And we've started to see a big fallout mental health-wise. And I think there's been quite a number of deaths already this year within homelessness in Dublin. We're nearly at half the figure for last year, and we're only barely into May, so that will be a huge concern for us. And I think, again, the support is something that the DRHE and the Minister need to look at, because the more of these privately run operated hospitals come into play, the more watered down the level of support they get for mental health and physical health and housing support. So if we keep doing that, the problems mental health wise particularly are going to get a lot worse.
Yeah, and I know that the mental health services in this country is very, very bad, but that's a discussion for another day. The people want to help out inner city, helping homeless. How can they go about it? Can they donate clothing or bedding or things like that? How can they help?
So what we're doing at the moment is we have allowed, you know, we are accepting closed donations again and donations of food, but due to COVID, it's only to our warehouse in Glasnevin, which is unit 144A, Slaney Close in Glasnevin, the Dublin Industrial Estate. So people can go. We have an ICHH clothes bank at the front door, so people can go and donate their clothes or donate food at the warehouse. But outside of that, I mean, for the likes of fundraising, for example, we haven't been able to have a physical fundraising event ourselves in you know, 15 months at this point. So we hope as the year progresses, like you said, maybe we are starting to see a bit of light at the end of the tunnel with COVID, and hopefully by Q4, by Christmas time and the run into Christmas, we will be able to do these events again. People can learn more about what we do on our website, which is ichh.ie.
Okay, Brian, listen, once again, thanks very much for taking the call, and I'm sure we'll be talking again.
Thanks very much, John. Nice to see you.
Thank you.